Welcome to GleeCast, the somewhat occasionally weekly home of Glee and casting. Here are your hosts, Emily and Erica.
Hello.
Hi. I think we should start with the most important thing of the week.
What's that?
Well, what did we do on Monday after recording the last episode?
We went to go see Cabin in the Woods. Whoa.
Cabin in the Woods, yeah. No, we didn't see Evil Dead the musical. We just saw Cabin in the Woods, which makes every time you say the title means you're going to start singing yes. Cabin in the Woods from Evil Dead the musical.
For sure.
Yeah. I'm hoping that all of our listeners have already seen it. We're not going to spoil anything. No. I think we're just going to say it's amazing and go see it right
it's
now.
It's super fun.
It is amazing. It's just great. It's wonderful. There's a unicorn. It's a fucking unicorn. I'm not going to say anything about the unicorn, but just trust me. When you see the unicorn, you'll be really happy if you're me and everyone else in the world.
Yes.
Yep. We're here today to talk about episode 16?
16, yeah.
16. Saturday Night Gleaver?
Yeah.
Do you hate the title as much as I do?
It's awful.
Yeah. Like, it was fun back in the day to, like, kind of joke about the, because, I mean, we call it Glee cast, and I do a Glee cap and all that stuff, but now it's just annoying.
We were original, though.
Yeah, we were doing this like 2 years ago, Ryan Murphy, so there.
Whatever.
This episode was written by Matthew Hodgson, who's been this, like, he's the guy whose name keeps popping up every episode as staff writer, which makes me think he's just one of the, like, on-staff writers. I feel like he's the intern that just, like, has to show up every week.
They're like, intern.
It's like, when they don't want to write a scene, it's like, oh, it's a Sam Mercedes scene. Give it to Matthew. That's just my theory. I have no idea about this man. But written by him and directed by Bradley Bucher, who's directed a whole bunch of episodes. Generally, he has a pretty good track record. I think this season he's had some shitty episodes. But season 2 and 3, he had some of the stronger ones for a while. But before we do that, there was one other thing in the universe of Glee that we can talk about, right? The yearbook?
Yes, the Glee yearbook.
Yep.
We briefly mentioned it. Our listener, Beth, actually purchased it and had posted in our group that she had purchased it and said that she would send us a review, which she did. Would you like me to read it?
I would.
She says, "Hi, Erica and Emily. Receive my...
Hi, Beth.
Hello. Receive my McKinley High Thunderclap." Yes, that's the title. "And I found it to be, in the words of Blaine Anderson, adorable. The book itself is the same size as a standard yearbook, hardcover, and approximately 144 pages long. The pages are thick, the binding library quality, and the picture is bright and glossy. For the price, this surprised me, though thought it was going to be paperback, cheap paper stock, and maybe only 64 pages long. Things I liked about it. One, unlike my high school yearbook, which was filled with pictures of people I either didn't know or like, I know and like everyone in it. Two, concerning the pictures, and it is loaded with pictures, about half are shots that I had not seen before.
That's cool.
Three, you get the feeling that Rachel and Kurt put the yearbook together, has a nice scrapbook look to it, colors are coordinated. Things that other people might not like about it. One, not a lot of writing in it. If you were looking for a juicy fat tome about the making of Glee or behind the scene tidbits, you'll want to skip this book. It's about the pictures just like a real yearbook. Two, its main focus is the Glee Club, football team, and Cheerios. It would have been fun to include a big section of photos of all the clubs Rachel belonged to. Three, minor spoilers as to who is and who isn't a senior. Yeah, it's a lot of fluff and I like it. Some things are meant to be fun and this is one of them. Beth."
Okay, cool.
So, if you want to run out and grab your copy.
There you go. There's the Glee cast review.
It seems to have a pretty good
outline. For me, it's one of those things, if I find it like on a clearance rack, I'll probably pick it up. But I can't even find my old yearbook, my own.
I know where mine is.
I thought I lost mine. And then actually for whatever reason, at Christmas, I found it. And a bunch of friends were over and we were going through it. And it was... I think at this point I'm out of high school long enough to find my yearbook really entertaining.
Yeah.
Because now it's not just the pictures, it's reading what people wrote and knowing where they ended up and such, like, was actually – because there's a part in our yearbook where it was like, write down your own favorite movie and all your stuff. And it was like, my favorite actor was Russell Crowe. Like, I know. I'm embarrassed to say it now, but – in 2000, times are different, okay? He was considered hot back then. I'm not kidding. Like, we thought he was, like, a bad boy in a cool way. We didn't know he was just an asshole. Things were different in 2000. It was 12 years ago. Leave me alone. Okay. On that note, should we get into the episode?
Sure.
Okay. break out your bell bottoms and cut off your balls to reach that falsetto. Glee's got boogie fever this week as Will Schuster tries out an old direction on his new directions with a disco assignment that will somehow magically help Mercedes, Santana, and Finn find their purpose for the rest of their lives. With some help from Sam, Mercedes decides to go to LA or YouTube University or something to be a singer. After Britney releases their sex tape, Santana realizes she doesn't want to be famous at any cost and will, thanks to Sue, be attending the University of, was it Louisiana or Louisville?
Louisville.
In Louisville. On a full scholarship. Finn mopes a lot, then decides to go to New York and be just like Tony Manero. Hopefully, that means next season will involve an entire episode devoted to homaging Staying Alive, but I'm getting my hopes up. Life plans were made, a cat played a maid, and we still want to punch Alex from the Glee Project in case you missed it on Glee. Okay. I know that there's been mixed emotions about this episode.
There's been a lot of talk about this episode.
Mm-hmm.
I did have very mixed emotions because when it started, I definitely was like, oh, like they kept hitting
the points. The first 10 minutes of this episode were great.
And I was like, this could actually happen.
This could be a great episode, like, yeah.
Yeah, and then it wasn't.
I think I agree that like it opened, like I was excited watching it because I'm like, and even like I'm looking at my high notes and I feel like all of them kind of came out in the first like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Because it was like they had, like it was just back to being like a sharp writing and dialogue was really clever. They were, you know, making fun of themselves.
They made use of the inner monologue, which they haven't in a long time.
Right, but in a strong way because it was a Will monologue. He had a diorama. Like, it was just funny and kind of weird. And I'm like, yeah, I like this.
I forgot about the diorama.
The dioramas to scale. Good. And, like, it opened with a great song, I thought. I liked the first song. I was like, yeah. I am so surprised to think that I'm really – because I thought I was going to hate this episode based on the preview last week. I don't think the rest of the episode lived up to it in any way. I think the problem – I think there's two big problems with it. One is that Corey Monheith is just not a good actor. And the other being I liked the idea of them – because I think when they've done album episodes, I think they've actually been pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
The Fleetwood Mac one was a really good episode. And because it kind of makes sense. An album is a story, so it makes sense that you can kind of get a good episode out of one. But the problem was the songs to me – it was the falsetto. It was nobody was singing. Everybody was just doing this weather, which I can't do right now because I don't have a voice.
Really high.
It's and so it just feels like, what's the point of watching them sing this right now when it's not their voice at all? It doesn't sound
and
it wasn't.
And it wasn't like Rocky Horror where they did performed a play.
Right.
Like,
no, it was just
if they had, maybe if they had like done the like parodied the movie, like it would have been different. But
and they tried to cram in the movie. In a kind of weird way. Like, on one hand,
Wayne brings it up.
Wayne brings this up in his email. I should probably just leave it to him. Because I kind of like
what... He says it really well, too.
Yeah, because when you've seen Saturday Night Fever, it's...
Not the feel-good...
Well, you know what it reminds me of? And I can't remember if I've talked about this before. Have you ever seen The Red Shoes?
No, the ballet movie. Talked about it a lot.
Okay,
times.
Because it's the same case where if you've seen A Chorus Line, the movie, in the movie they keep having this thing where like all the half of the dancers wanted to be a dancer because they saw the Red Shoes and it made them want to dance. And the Red Shoes is an amazing film. I love it. I own it. But spoiler alert, it's a dark film where at the end the ballerina has to choose between love and ballet and ends up dancing to death. So it's like, and that's the movie that made you want to be a dancer. Kind of like Staying Alive making you want to move to New York.
Yeah.
It's kind of disturbing in some ways. But let's cover the plot. Why don't we start with the Glee kids and then we'll get to He Who Shall Not Be Named.
Yeah, really.
Okay, so Will kind of is starting, again, another thing I liked about the episode, it starts immediately with Will saying, I'm worried about my seniors because, you know, a couple of them don't know what they want to do, like these three. So we're like, yes, we know they're seniors now. Right, so we knew it was Mercedes, Finn, and Santana.
Right. What I didn't like is that they were basically like, well, we haven't given these two any attention all year, and we have to use Finn because this has to be about Finn and Rachel.
Because we have to keep it going with the Finn-Rachel stuff.
So let's just shove all of Mercedes and Santana's entire story arc into one episode.
Yeah.
Which was a big problem.
Yeah, it didn't work. Because you could have easily done a whole episode on... I think you could have done a whole episode on Mercedes.
No one wants to see it.
No one wants to see it. I just don't think... I mean, I don't think Amber Riley is a good enough actress to make me want to watch her have an episode.
Mm-hmm.
And it also, because it's never... But I mean, this was a problem with Blaine last week because we haven't seen the progression of it. Mm-hmm. It's not like I've been dying for to find out what Mercedes is doing. We were just curious because we didn't know last week. Whereas Santana, you know, is awesome. Naya Rivera is great. So I would want, you know, an hour about Santana. So let's do Santana first, I guess.
Okay. She's basically like, I want to be famous.
Yeah.
So Britney's like, okay, I'll make you famous.
I'll do a sex tape.
Releasing our
which
sex tape.
Which made sense for Britney. And I think...
and she intercut it with Lord Covington doing household chores.
High notes.
Oh, such a high note. That was amazing. That was great.
It was cute because I liked... It made perfect sense from Britney's point of view of, oh, okay, I'm listening to you say you want to be famous. This is how you get famous. And now, because I don't watch too much reality TV, that's not America's Next Top Model. When they talked about, like, well, you know, I looked at people who were famous, and I mean, I still don't know who Kim Kardashian is, really. But, like, I know when somebody actually explained to me, they're like, well, she made a sex tape and then she became a reality. I'm like, wait, explain the logic of this. And it makes perfect sense then. Like, yeah, okay, well, we're two hot lesbians. I guess we'll make a sex tape.
Yeah.
The issue I had with, and this is more Finn issue, but I think it kind of trickles into Santana too, is this idea that you have to know what you're doing with your life when you're 18.
Yeah.
No. You go to college and figure it out.
What you want
to
do.
Like, it's not like you need to know that I want to be an actor or I want to be a plumber.
We're still figuring it out.
I'm 30 and I'm still figuring it out. And so that was a huge issue I had. And it's more a Finn issue. But with Santana, I did like this little arc. It was a little rushed.
It was cute.
But yeah. I like it kind of as a lesson of, like, you want to be famous. Do you really want to be famous this way?
You know what they could have done to help this episode? Pulled out the stupid vocal adrenaline storyline, and then they would have had room for everybody else to breathe a little bit.
Well, that's true. We'll get there. Settle down. Okay?
Fear Factor is still on.
Is it still on?
It came back.
Really?
It's not still on. It came back.
Okay.
It was off the air for, like, 10 years, and then they brought it back last season.
Okay.
So I think... I forget when it, maybe it's a summer show now. I definitely watched it. I think it might be a summer show now.
I just said, I'm like, is it 2003 again? I just had no idea if Fear Factor was on.
No, it came back with Joe Rogan and everything. It was quite enjoyable.
Interesting.
People are still douchebags.
Well, that's kind of the point of reality TV. As again, I'm just glad, like, because this came up in our Facebook group too about, like, kids watching Glee. Because we kind of said, like, the whole, like, Javon's a generation, blah, blah, blah. But then we had, like, some of our listeners who are parents who were like, well, it has actually made my kids are now growing up seeing gay teenagers and, like, these issues that we didn't have when we were younger. And I think this fit into that to me was. Because kids growing up do just want to be famous. They just want to be a reality. I can be Rebecca Black. I can make a single and put it on the internet and I'll be rich and famous. And, blah. And so I think this was a good for the younger audience as a lesson of, like, you know, here, Santana learned her lesson. Think about it, kids. Think about it.
Yeah.
So.
It worked.
Yep. Let's do Mercedes.
Whose dad is a dentist.
And possibly also Mike Chang's dad. Because he apparently doesn't understand her dream because he's a dentist. It just made me think of, like, when Mike Chang's dad didn't want him to dance because, you know, he needs a stable job. It's like her dad's like, my dad's a dentist. He doesn't understand my dreams.
Whatever.
Right. And also, do we know anything about Mercedes's home life?
We know nothing.
Other than that she's Christian. Yeah.
What? I got all confused because what is Santana's dad, a plastic surgeon then? These kids all have really successful white-collar fathers, apparently.
Well, Bert obviously owns a tire shop.
Right. But I thought I couldn't remember what Santana's dad did, but I feel like she also says a doctor.
Because it's on the dentist episode, on the Britney Spears episode.
Okay. That's why
she says my dad's a real doctor, not a dentist. Okay. Like, he's a real doctor. So yeah, Santana's dad is a doctor of some sort. Although I feel like she negated that recently.
Because she said, I'm from Lima Heights, bitch.
Right.
And we're like,
Is your dad Dr. Nick? Mercedes's parents didn't understand her dreams or something. We didn't know Mercedes had dreams. I guess nobody did because we just don't care about her. I liked the – I know people had YouTube issues with the YouTube thing because, yes, it's true. You put – if I were to, you know – if I put a video of the great – like, we have friends who can really sing. If I put a video of them singing – and put it on YouTube, I guarantee that 405 out of 406 comments would not be positive.
Because
YouTube are trolls who just hate everything. But whatever.
Whatever you think, Glee.
Whatever,
you
Mercedes.
Think YouTube works.
Well, so what do you think is going to happen with her? Because I don't really know what her resolution was.
Is she going to, like, I don't think there was a resolution. Like, where are they going to go with it? Are they going to make, like, a talent agent find her on YouTube? Is her story going to be Rebecca Black? Like, is that, I don't know. Where do you go with that? Like, or is she just going to go to LA and that's it?
She should just keep trying out for American Idol. Like, have that be her thing. She, like, next season, if she's off the show, who knows? Because who knows anything? Where it's like, did you hear about Mercedes' audition or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all we need. We're fine. Done.
She could go now.
Yeah.
That is the other thought I had. I was like, oh, maybe she's just going to, like, leave the show now and not graduate.
Oh.
Because maybe she'll, like...
I feel like they wouldn't want to send that message.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah. So, I mean...
If Glee's anything, it's preachy.
I mean, the one nice thing was that it was nice to see her and Sam in a scene that wasn't like, my boyfriend Shane is going to eat you. Yeah. It was nice to not have that. I don't know if they're in a relationship.
Pure audio gold right there. You people are so lucky right now. That was amazing.
We do it all for you, kids. All for you.
All right.
Finn. I use caps, which tells you that I was angry.
Yeah.
I use caps a lot in my outline today. Because it's all like, Finn doesn't know what he wants to do with his life. Just apply. Apply to colleges. Go to the college.
I was thinking about it while I was watching it. I know you love when Puck and Finn have scenes together, but I hated
this one. This scene was terrible.
Hated that scene. I was like, oh,
I believe in you.
My God.
I don't, because it was like, I don't know, because it was the kind of line. You know what it was? It reminded me like Matthew Hutchins had just watched Good Will Hunting, where it's like, I don't know much about life, but every day I know one thing. I drive to your house, and I hope you don't answer the door. That's what that scene felt like. I don't know much about anything, but I know this. What 18-year-old says that? Come on. What 26-year-old playing an 18-year-old says that?
I don't know.
Yeah, no, I normally really like their scenes, but this episode I just thought was cheese-tastic.
It was just awful.
So Finn is just, I don't know what I want to do. I'm just confused. And Corey Monteith was awful in this episode. Just bad. Just like,
bad.
Bad, 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 bad.
And
bad.
He was all like, oh, whoa. Hey, excuse me.
Bless you. Erica is all, sorry. Oh, that brought Wally over.
Wally.
He came to say bless you.
Thanks, Wally. I'll talk about it during the songs. During one of the... just so hippie. He has really big hips. And they're like the widest part of his body. And the widest part of a body on a male is supposed to be their shoulders. And then like his... His hips.
I know.
It's weird.
I know. We were talking about a little bit on the Facebook group about the... inside the actor's studio. Because he comes across... he's more likable as himself on that than he is ever on Glee. Like, you get the feeling that he's a pretty cool guy in real life. Probably very nice. Probably very funny. Apparently, he had, was into drugs and stuff as a teenager and kind of just found acting, kind of got lucked into it, obviously.
Well, that's probably where the Finn storyline came.
Because clearly,
from.
Like Finn, he's never taking an acting lesson. Because that's the thing. It's like, I'm going to go to Inside the Actor's Studio.
Oh, thank you, Wally.
Which I believe is that essentially he's going to Pace University, which, first of all, he has to apply to. It is now, yeah. But the Actor's Studio is a great... Because I looked it up a little bit because I'm like, what is this a fucking school? I think it's a grad school program. So that means he has to go to college first. Yeah. And it's just, go to the University of Ohio
and take their
theater program, which is probably great.
Glee writers, you should Google stuff before you put it in the show.
Oh, it wouldn't be that hard. But it just felt like, and I like the idea of it. I like the idea that Will is looking at Finn, because Finn has always kind of been young Will's
story, yeah.
And I like the idea that Will is probably more concerned for Finn, because he sees, I don't want you to go down my path. Mm-hmm. And they could have played that up. Will married his high school sweetheart, and look how well that turned out. And now that's, it didn't work. And the whole Rachel saying, I'm going to put my dreams on hold. If you don't want to go to New York, I won't go to New York. Okay, Bella Swan.
Yeah.
As much as we say Glee is trying to preach to its 18-year-old audience, it's also sending really bad messages in that way. Because no, when you're 18, you should not be changing your life for your boyfriend. You're 18. You're too young to do that. Go do your own thing. If your relationship is that strong, it will last when you're on different sides of the country. Most of the time, it doesn't, but sometimes it does. There are some couples who are high school sweethearts, and they go to different colleges, and they stay together, and they get married, and they're happy, blah, blah, blah. Sure, probably 90% it doesn't, but that's because it's not meant to. That's because you were too young when you got together, and you need to both live your own lives, and maybe it will work out, and maybe it won't. And I hate that Glee is not letting that happen with Rachel and Finn.
Yeah, because that would be the correct message to send.
I feel like they're going to, like, instead break up, like, Tina and Mike or something to do that in a way where, like, because they have to. They can't make all of these couples last because it's, I think that's actually a really bad message to send.
Yeah.
So it kind of irked the feminist in me just of forcing a young relationship to seem more important than these things that you've been dreaming about your whole life. I think 18 is too young to make these decisions.
Yep.
Okay. Okay. So now we come to Wade.
Wade.
AKA Unique.
What is his real name?
Alex.
Oh, Alex. Yeah.
Right. In real life, Alex Punchface. On the show, his name was Wade. But he's really Unique.
We hated him on the Glee Project.
Because he's talented. I'm going to say this. Kid doesn't know how to act yet. Maybe that's not necessarily his fault, because I'm sure in a high school theater production, he was probably great.
Yeah.
But he just doesn't know, like Damien, he doesn't know how to do dialogue or how to do with the camera. And in all of his dialogue-heavy scenes, I felt like he just, you know, he's doing too much with his eyebrows. He just doesn't quite know what to do. And it's, and that's the problem. The Glee Project was casting kids who had no acting experience. But we'll get to the songs. I mean, he can perform. He's a very good performer.
But you know what? He's a dick about it. And that was
right. And that's why we hated him on the Glee Project. But the thing about this storyline, you get the sense, a couple things. You feel like, well, they've probably realized now they're trying to check off every minority group that has not been covered. So now let's do transsexual, or I don't know what the right term is. I don't know if he's transgendered, I guess. Because I don't know if he's, because when he says, like, you know, he is different from Kurt. It's not that, but I don't know if it's that he feels like he's a woman that he, you know, eventually wants to be a woman, or it's just that he feels he's more of a drag queen who, you know, feels more alive performing in drag, but then would, you know, be as a man in the rest of his life. I don't know. They didn't really define it. He has one more episode, so who knows what that will be.
What it felt like to me was, well, first of all, and we talked about this on the group, it was all decided in the Glee Project.
The dialogue was written in the judging room.
Yes.
And which is the same thing they did with,
Sam.
With Sam. But in this case, it was like literally a line Ian Brennan threw out was like, he'd be like the love child of Mercedes and Kurt. Yeah. That is what Wade said in this episode. I'm the love child of you too.
You. Sam Dreadlock Sam, not Sam Trouty Mouth Sam.
Right. Yeah. Jesus Dreadlock Boy. Jesus.
Yeah, what's his name on the show? Joe.
Sure.
Dread Sam. Yeah, I mean, and it also felt like they turned around, looked at each other and said, wait a minute, how many episodes do we have left? And they were like, that's it? Oh, crap, we have to use that Wade kid. Let's get him in this episode.
Okay, let's throw him in there.
Like, that's exactly what it felt like.
Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, I don't think the story, like, I didn't hate the storyline as much as I could have, I think, because it was something they haven't done before. They haven't addressed, you know, dressing like a woman if you're a man. They haven't addressed transgenderism.
Did they need to?
I don't know. I mean, it was just another moment of, wait, I don't know if I, you know, we're open. Kurt and Mercedes are open-minded because, you know, Kurt's gay and Mercedes supports him. But maybe there's a line. And, you know, the same thing we've had with, you know, Kurt dressing up, you know, Gaga. Fancier.
We did that. The Gaga episode.
Again, so with that being said, you know, I'm sure there is, you know, some kid out there who's watching this and saying, wow, that was me. And no, I think that was the point of this.
Again, let's do it right. Let's not shoehorn it into an episode.
Cram it in there.
Let's not use a shitty actor. Let's do a multi-episode arc. Mm-hmm. Like, things that would have made it right instead of, here's this thing, we're going to shove it down your throats and then we're never going to talk about it again.
Yeah, well, they have to talk about it one more time.
Well, I'm sure he'll just be on stage performing at Nationals.
Yeah, probably at
Because
Nationals.
We saw what they did with everyone else that came from the Glee Project. They're all just background characters.
Yeah,
now.
Well, because they're not good enough actors.
Well, clearly.
I mean, I think Lindsay was, but they
didn't pick her.
And by the way, that Allie Adler, what's her name? The vocal coach on the Glee project, bitch, the blonde.
Oh,
she's like a producer now on Glee or something. Oh. So it's like, fuck.
So we're never gonna get Lindsay.
You know what it is? She's a judge on the Glee project now. She's gonna be one of the four. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know that sucks. But yeah, no, I agree. I think Lindsay was the only one. Joe, I mean, I know Kelly hates Joe. I feel like Joe blends a little better in the background than some of the others, than like Damien. I think Joe hasn't had enough dialogue, so I don't know, and I'm not asking for more of it. But I think like looking, he blends in there a little better than the other guys do, I guess. But yeah, I think Lindsay was the only one who could have actually been on the show as a character. And
could have had an amazing arc as Rachel's protege. Yep. And we're just going to write the season with Lindsay in it. We'll rewrite the season.
Fan fiction, here we come. I did like that he boycotted West Side Story. I thought that was amusing. Cute. Yeah.
But yeah, it was just shoved in there, and I can't stand that kid.
I know.
Which is sad, because I don't want to hate anyone.
I know. He's like 18.
I don't want to be like, I hate you. But, and because he is like a minority, like I feel worse for hating him.
Right.
Because of the way he feels about himself, but he's just,
but he's a bitch about it. Yeah. And he's not really a drag queen. Ryan Murphy was like, you can probably do drag. So he was like, I'm a drag queen now.
I'll do drag.
I don't think that's the way it works. Yeah. Oh, we didn't talk about Smash. I don't remember what happened on it.
Oh, Uma Thurman was on it.
Oh, and Leo had a line, why do I want to go to college if it just means I'm going to meet someone and fall in love and get married and then our relationship's going to end? That was funny. But that was all I remember about the episode.
Yeah, not a lot happened.
Yeah. Should we do the songs of...
Yeah, dancing, yeah. The first song Emily has listed as dancing. Yeah.
I know it's got like a more disco title, but
also known as You Should Be Dancing, which is the line that occurs over and over and over and over again.
But dancing, yeah, is what pops out to me.
You should be dancing.
Yes. Dancing, yeah.
No. Anyway.
Fire around the world.
This is a cute number. It was Blaine and Mike and Brittany.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like a fantasy sequence that transitioned into the Glee room. So I had no
problem. I was all for this one. And again, it opened, because another thing I think everybody's been complaining about is that we haven't had that much Britney. Mm-hmm. And we haven't had that much Britney dancing or Mike dancing. It just feels like any of the dance numbers, that they're not doing what they should be doing. So it was nice that they just bam open with three of the three best people to watch perform on Glee. Then we get to
That's the Way. I like it.
Oh,
right.
Oh, wait, I guess so. Wait, I thought it was Saturday Night Fever. Night Fever, Night Fever. Isn't that what they danced to?
I'm reading it off of Wikipedia.
No, I don't think they did. That's the Way I Like It.
Oh no, you know what?
Oh, it was right. That was the flashback to Will winning nationals. Right. That was actually kind of cute. A cute flashback. I liked it.
Then we have Night Fever by the Bee Gees.
Indeed we do.
Which Will and Sue start, and then
as like a dance Joe contest, and essentially.
Blaine sing also.
It was the dancing was cute, and I mean everybody got to dance. It was cute. Like I thought it was actually funny when Finn comes in and dances terribly, and everybody just kind of looks awkwardly. Puck's move.
That's like, the only move he has.
I know, but it was so much better than Sam's, who was a stripper.
Oh, I know.
You would think Sam would be able to come in and like do some moves, but no.
But Puck always does that move. That's his move. I'm doing it repeatedly now.
Now I think Erica has a penis.
But no, it's his only move. It's the one he does all the time.
But it's his signature. Watching it worked for me, but listening to it, it's falsetto. And what is the point of listening to good singers sing falsetto? It just doesn't feel like they're doing anything.
Nope.
Yeah. We move on to Disco Inferno.
Mercedes, yep.
This one, as I said, they got their money's worth out of that disco floor.
Yes, they did.
I actually really liked this one. Did you?
The whole episode, this episode was just, oh, it's disco, man.
Yeah. I mean, they didn't do anything new with any of the songs, which is always an issue I have. Yeah. And whenever they do these episodes, for some reason, especially, they feel so tied down to the material. But I thought Amber Riley, it was Amber Riley doing what she can do.
Yeah.
But I thought she nailed it. And both vocally and watching her. Because I thought she was dancing better than I've seen her dance. It just had more energy and life to it. And I actually enjoyed this one much more than I think I've enjoyed any Mercedes number this year, definitely.
Okay. I can see that.
Okay.
Then they did Santana sang "If I Can't Have You" by Yvonne Elliman,
who I believe was the original Mary Magdalene in Jesus Christ Superstar.
Oh, really? Yeah. See, the thing about disco is I don't have a lot to say about it because I just start singing it because it's the same words over and over again.
I mean, it's kind of the birth of autotune in a way.
Yeah.
Like, it's the birth of very synthetic music where you don't actually have to sing well to really do it. And it's actors singing out of their range, but in a range that's like a safe range where they don't really have to do anything but just stay within there. And so it's just, you know, vocally it's dull. They can perform it well, but hearing it, like, there's none of these songs that I'm going to download and listen to.
I haven't watched it. Like, I didn't watch it yesterday. I watched it a couple of days ago. There was like an awkward moment after this. Will who was like, and you're not just singing a nice song.
You're singing this because you're going to go to law school. Yeah.
And that was so awkward, but it wasn't even the law school thing. It was like, it was him being like, because you support gay marriage. Yeah. And that was super awkward.
It was odd writing. Yeah.
Cause she was like, what?
I guess it was him trying to say like, go be a lawyer, go do something with your life.
Yeah.
Or just go to college and figure it out. Cause that's what you do in college. Mm. How many people out there went to college and became what they thought they were going to become? Very few. Cause you learn I remember freshman year, everybody I knew was majoring in psychology. Except for me. Like, everybody freshman year was like, I think I'm going to major in psychology. Oh, okay. I know none of them continued with that
none
field.
Of them are,
and it's not like they dropped out of college. They just took a couple of classes and realized, I actually want to be a social worker, you know? Santana looked great, though.
She did.
She had the disco jumpsuit. Like, she had the headband. She looked great.
Much to Mike's dismay, I love jumpsuits.
Well, they're great. They're just
unflattering.
They would look terrible.
Well, did you see her butt? Her butt looked phenomenal.
Did it? Because she was like a low back, right?
And she has a booty tooch.
She has a booty tooch. Oh, God. Not a smoochie tooch. Not a boochie booch. Did you watch it last? Oh, yeah, you watched it.
Well, I watched it with you.
That's right. Yeah. That's the thing about jumpsuits is, like, you have to be, you know, like 5'10 and a size 2, but with boobs and a butt to wear them. But
yep.
I could never, like, me in a jumpsuit would just be sad. But, yeah, they can look flattering on other people. How Deep Is Your Love?
How Deep Is Your Love by the Bee Gees, sung by Rachel Berry.
That's all I have to say. I thought it was cute how she was like, no, I want you to, but do you want to hear the song? Because I've been working hard on it. Like, it was a cute little Rachel moment, but I just didn't care.
Nope.
Yeah. Let's just keep going.
Then we have
Boogie Shoes.
Boogie Shoes by Casey and the Sunshine Band, which Wade performed. And like we said, the performance was
I wanted to hate it. I really wanted to hate it, but it was fantastic. This was probably my favorite number of the show. He was great. He sang it, sang the hell out of it and danced the hell out of it. I mean, it's always fun to see vocal adrenaline.
Yep.
And I really enjoyed this one as much as I wanted to hate it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh God, this was probably like, I hate the song to begin with. And then we had to have Finn sing more than a woman.
Ugh. And no, not only that, we had to see Finn spinning, looking at the camera. I don't ever want Finn to look at the camera.
This was the number where he was actually dressed in like disco clothes and it made me feel really uncomfortable. But I did enjoy everyone else's dancing.
It just made me think like, oh, that's like what it would look like if you were having sex with Corey Monteith. Like that's the angle you'd have. And it's like, really
like
not
during
good.
Didn't they did it during Touch Me Too, didn't they?
Yeah. And yeah, that's, oh my God, that's right, they did. And it's just so unbelievably awkward. I don't know. Other guys can pull it off. But Corey Monteith does not look good when he's looking right into your soul. It feels like I've been violated. Oh God, I'm still like uncomfortable now.
And finally,
well, there's a little more on this one. It was the same issue with More Than a Woman, where it just felt like there was no point in listening to it.
I don't like the song to begin with.
Yeah, the background was cute because I liked everybody dancing and dressed up disco-like, and I thought like everybody looked great. Like the girls all look great, and like, you know, Kurt had a really cute moment where did a little like, I don't know, he had a little singing moment that was really cute. And then.
Oh, and finally, you can't do Saturday Night Gleaver without Staying Alive, which Finn, Mercedes, and Santana did in their polyester.
Right, as everybody else. John Travolta. But Quinn joined in.
Yeah, that was so awkward.
That was weird.
Because I was like, oh, I like hit Mike and I was like, oh, they could have bookend wheelchairs. And then I was like, wait, where's Quinn?
But there's no left bookend.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't notice it until I know a lot of people were writing about it on, like, different sites and different – I can't remember if anybody mentioned it on our page, but it was definitely, like, noticed by others. And then when I watched it the second time, I'm like, holy fuck, where's Quinn?
She had, like, one shot in the episode during one of the other songs.
And it was
songs.
A really awkward shot where, like, she was dancing and she still looked like she didn't want to be there. So I don't know.
Diana Varagon, get out now.
She needs – you could tell she's just, like – I can't do that. I'm number four sequel because I still have to record more Glees.
But yeah.
It was cute, but huh? Like they had to do it that way, I guess. But whatever. All right, high notes.
High notes. Wait, I just had one and I lost it. Well, definitely, I loved that during More Than a Woman, Blaine was rocking a gold chain. He looked really good in his disco garb with his gold chain.
He could pull off anything, that man.
Looks very good. In his disco clothing. I love him.
Blaine.
Oh, I know what my other one was. Jonathan Groff. Hello.
Jonathan Groff. And what I've decided, I realized as I was watching it, I'm like, Jonathan Groff is a better actor than that character deserved to be played by. Because I think he's great. He is so good at being him. A jerk. He's phenomenally talented when it comes to performing. But I just think he gets it. He knows how to play a smarmy asshole with no vanity. Like, he is good. And it's a shame that Glee had just drove his character into every direction that didn't make sense.
Yep.
I hope we get more of him. I imagine we will at Nationals. If Wade's got to be back, yeah, he's got to be back, right? So, yeah, I was really happy to see him turn up in a non-Rachel section. Hi, Deb. Well, we are, but yeah.
I'll pause it.
Okay.
We're back.
We paused as my dad. We're again in person recording, which is a rarity. But we're recording at my parents' house, and my dad popped in to see what we were doing. And then when I asked him about Glee, he gave up on it a year ago because he thought it was too much gay stuff.
Yeah.
But not in like
it happens.
Not in that way. He just didn't like that all the gay characters were heroes. He felt it was it just became easy, I think. Other high notes. Do you have any more?
I Lord Tubington doing household chores. How could
oh,
you?
God, I know.
And obviously all the Meta Sue stuff, which you have listed.
Yep.
So you could go.
I'm trying to figure out how I can make Mookie and Joplin work
do
for me.
Household chores.
Like, ugh. I don't even know. But I wish I could. If anybody has any ideas on how to train cats to do household chores, please, leecast@gmail.com. I like that the recapper, I think Wayne made fun of this line, but that they should change their name to No Directions.
Yeah, it was funny. The recap was funny this week.
It was funny. The scale Glee
of course.
The two scale diorama of the Glee Club. Because again, it was just kind of odd and Willish, and I kind of liked it because we haven't had that in a while. That they addressed what we were wondering about last week regarding the future of the seniors. The line, you've been out of ideas since Madonna week.
That was great.
Because it was. It was Sue being very meta and very, and that's when you were like, this episode's going to be good.
Yeah,
and then
I know.
It wasn't. Blaine's glee at the disco floor. when like they walked in, they're all looking at it like they don't know what it is. But you see this like light go on because Blaine knows exactly what that shit is. I think it was Sue referred to Saturday Night Fever as a dancicle.
Oh.
And Rachel had a great line where she's like, well, we applaud your use of the correct terminology. it was just, a funny little line that I liked. And that's why I was like, this is a well-written episode. Note that, yeah, all of these, up to, like, eight, all of these came in the first 10 minutes of the episode. Santana's theory about Brad.
That was pretty great.
That he...
I feel like, you know what it is? I'm starting to feel like... I'm going back to Fight Club again. Spoilers. I feel like Santana's the only one who could see Brad. She's the only one who ever acknowledges him.
You're right. Other than that first season when Rachel said, he's just always there.
He's just always around.
Yeah. God, that would be amazing.
Santana's the only one who ever is like, this guy. Like, get the piano guy.
Everybody's like, what do you mean,
where's Santana?
The piano? That would be great if Brad didn't exist.
I wish they could end the whole series that way. Just be like, it was all in Santana's head.
Or like, it was all in Brad's head. And Brad is like.
Brad's sitting at home, like, writing a blog about.
Yeah.
About
like,
kids.
Brad's day job is like, he flips burgers. Yeah. Like, and that's when he comes home and he dreams about this world where he is the savior of the piano player. Oh, girl,
listen to us now, Ryan Murphy.
Right? Hey, Ryan. Okay, and the random continuity good thing was when Will is, I think, talking to Finn, and he's in their classroom, and he has behind him on the chalkboard, there's like all this writing, and at first I was mad because I thought it was Spanish, and I'm like, oh, come on. But then I realized I was just reading it. It was like, secretaria. Oh, that's English. And that it was like government stuff. So I'm like, oh, right, because Will teaches history now. So I was glad that they, this small touch of like somebody in the writer's room was like, wait, wait, no, the board should be history.
Yeah.
So that made me happy. And Brittany's, I thought it was really, Brittany saving the chicken testicle, not the chicken testicle, the whatever testicle, but the line, it tastes exactly like a chicken testicle. Testicle, was really funny. Low notes. Well, I feel like we went through most of them.
We went through most of them, yeah.
Just Alex and the fact that we hate him. But also the fact that most of his dialogue was written in, like, a conversation on the Glee Project and never edited. Like, yeah. Not edited at all. Like, it probably, like, they probably just replayed that episode of Glee, the Glee Project, and were like, you know what? That line was funny. Just throw that in there. Corey Monteith's acting disabilities, which are getting stronger. A terrible Twilight-like lesson that one should give up her dreams at the age of 18 for her boyfriend. A really obvious plug for the Inside the Actors Studio. Yeah. And in caps, you don't need a major your freshman year. You don't need to know what you're doing with your life. That's what college is for.
Yep.
Yeah. We have feedback.
We do.
Let us read said feedback.
From the wonderful Wayne Kotke.
From the wonderful Wayne Kotke. Who writes, we can try to understand the casting Lee's effect on men, Polly and Astra. I don't know how it happened. No, I like
sorry,
that.
Sorry, I just got it. Even though I already read the email, hearing it out loud made it ding in my head.
Sometimes that's the way to be. I don't know how it happened, but somehow over the years, Saturday Night Fever got lumped in with Grease. Nowadays, they're both considered campy, lighthearted 1970s John Travolta musicals. Just the thing to have on or on in the background in your at your 1970s theme bunko party. But here's the problem with that. Saturday Night Fever is a gritty, downbeat film, awash in rape, gang violence, suicide, racial tension, and more rape. Tony Manero is no kind of role model, and his movies is not exactly a feel-good, inspirational triumph either. It's often an unflattering character study of a selfish and irresponsible young man who may or not be getting his act together when the end credits roll. So right off the bat, I'm resistant to a Glee episode inspired by this movie, which does not at least acknowledge the darkness of the source material. But this episode, Saturday Night Gleaver, got a great review in the AV Club and seems to have its defenders in the Facebook group as well. So I'm going to try to rewatch it with an open mind. Yeah, I mean, sorry, rewatch Saturday Night Fever. It's dark. Yeah. And a random movie recommendation. There's a movie from Chile, I want to say, called Tony Manero, which is sort of about a guy who's like obsessed with Saturday Night Fever, who becomes kind of a murderer.
Oh.
Gentleman's Guide reviewed it a couple years ago, and it's a good companion piece to Saturday Night Fever. Then again, so is Staying Alive, but that's a different story. Okay, that's what you missed on Glee. Sound seems to be back permanently now. That's good. I was worried. But that new directions, no directions pun, ugh. Ugh yourself, Wayne.
We liked it.
We did. You should be dancing. That's good advice, Glee. I was really hoping this episode was going to be a Heather Morris, Harry Connick, Shum Jr. tour de force, but that didn't happen. At least they got to be Darren Criss's backup dancers in that cutely staged high energy opening number. Good to start to the show. Good start to the show. Side note. I love Harry Connick Jr. At the same time, I've always kind of gotten him confused with Dermot Mulroney because I think they kind of look the same.
I can see that.
And it was very confusing because they were both playing, Harry Connick Jr. was on SVU for a while as Olivia's kind of boyfriend. And I guess Dermot Mulroney was on New Girl, I think. And I don't really watch the show, but I'll like catch it. And it was confusing the hell out of me. I'm like, Harry Connick Jr. is in a lot of stuff right now. But yeah, no, that was.
I used to get Dermot Mulroney
and Dylan McDermott.
And Dylan McDermott because of their names, but when I was much younger and my best friend's wedding came out, I used to get Dermot Mulroney
because Dermot Mulroney
with Rupert Everett.
Oh, see, I got
they were in that
for a different reason because Dermot Mulroney was Julia Roberts's not boyfriend in My Best Friend's Wedding. Mm-hmm. He's the one she's you know the love interest, and Dylan McDermott is her husband in Steel Magnolias.
Oh,
so I was just
all confused.
Like I had nothing. Dermot Mulroney, I found out recently, used to be married to Catherine Keener for a while, so that kind of helps me tell them apart. And Dylan McDermott does look distinctively different. Like, he doesn't really look like him. Dylan McDermott has dark hair and blue eyes. I think his stepmother is,
what else is he in?
Eve Ensler. Dylan McDermott was on The Practice.
I'll just look.
Dylan McDermott is like dark hair, blue eyes. He was on The Practice. I think he was in another TV show for a while. I thought he was on American Horror Story. Is he? Is he not?
Oh, yes, yes. He
okay.
Is.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. Now so I that's know him. Who he is. Okay.
Dermot Mulroney looks more like Harry Connick Jr. They look, they, yes. They have kind of a country-ish look about themselves.
Okay.
They both kind of have like the, they're cute, but they could at times be construed as
I think
not.
From now on, every episode of Gleecast, we have to discuss people who kind of have the same face, but don't really, but we get them confused.
We are on a 2-episode streak. I hope we can keep this going,
we'll
folks.
Have to come up with people.
Somebody's
got to
be a guest star next week. Okay, Wayne continues.
Will's okay. flashback.
Will's flashback is really well staged and arranged. If you listen, the vocal arrangement is totally different from what Glee normally does, with the vintage New Direction sounding more like a school choir than a pop group. In fact, this is what real-world show choirs actually sound like even today. Good point. Glee, you might want to be careful with these slinging around the phrase, disco sucks. The anti-disco movement in the late 1970s had some troubling racist and homophobic overtones. Tones. Look into it. Maybe not the vibe you want for this show. Humorously, Corey Monheith is clearly reading the words disco sucks from a teleprompter in this scene. Watch it again and you'll see. I didn't notice that. I read this email too late.
He's like sounding it out. Disco sucks.
I don't think he's a smart guy.
Sucks? Disco sucks.
It's an interesting thing. I kind of imagined the disco sucks movement had some, because I mean the response to it was like old time rock and roll.
Honestly, the only thing I really know about the Disco Sucks movement is I learned from Detroit Rock City. So
okay, yeah.
I love that movie.
I've never seen that.
Really?
Yeah,
it's so much fun. It's just
tell
silly,
me that, but
I love it.
I remember like when it came out, thinking I'm not going to like this movie. I don't, because I'm not a big. I don't like music movies. Movies about rock groups often. Because I mean, we've talked about the Empire Records.
Oh yeah.
Well, music movies often feel like they're talking down to me.
But it's not Empire Records. It's funny because okay. It's like. It's silly. And good. But who wrote it? Like someone
I think
wrote
Adam,
it.
Was it Adam Ripkin? The guy who did...
I think so.
Yeah.
I'll look.
I don't know. You'll look. I'll keep reading. Will's scale model diorama is something he's never used before, I don't think. And probably will never use again. But at least it shows that he actually does prepare for competitions before the bus ride over. Yeah, right? Again, with the goddamn focus pulls where one side of the screen goes blurry than the other. They actually use this after Will says Santana lacks focus. Get it? Focus! And the screen's all blurry because she lacks focus. Get it? Huh? How dumb do you think we are, Glee? Will's conversation with Sue brings back more of the metacriticism that the show has been offering a lot lately. But what good is the metacriticism if the show doesn't actually fix some of the problems it addresses?
That's exactly what I said.
Funny and well played, though, at least on Sue's half. Yeah.
Yeah, I said that exact same thing in the Facebook group.
Yep, no, you're...
Wayne and I agree on something.
There you go. So now we come to the Wade Adams, a.k.a. unique storyline. I know this story was why a lot of people loved the episode, but to me it felt a tiny bit like preaching to the choir. And I think Glee's been message-heavy, as it is lately. Besides, for this story to work, Jesse St. James has to be believable as a homophobe. Okay, I can suspend my disbelief enough to believe Jesse is straight, but to believe him as a guy who would be freaked out by Unique? Nope, sorry, Glee. Can't go that far. But I did like Jesse's ultra-brief reference to the Borg from Star Trek Next Generation.
See, now... 2 seconds we agree, 2 seconds later we don't agree. Wait, yeah. I don't think he was homophobic.
No.
He was worried about it screwing up their chances.
Because right. Remember him at Nationals last year, how he felt about the kiss. It was, that was the stupidest thing you can do, not because I care about you, Rachel, but because you just blew your chances at winning. And he was right. And I think that was how he felt this time.
Yeah, he thought Unique was going to screw their chances because they are in Ohio and it's middle
America. Right, and remember who the judges are at this competition. It's not music theater people. It's like the guy who sold the most cars at the used car lot downtown. Okay, Wayne continues. The light up dance floor from Saturday Night Fever cost $12,000, a fact which deeply upset the film's producer, Robert Stigwood, even though that floor became iconic. Adjusting for inflation, it would be about $39,000 today. How Sue got it into the choir room is beyond me. I love that Wayne can give us that kind of
thing. I know, that's amazing. Didn't she kind of explain it away, though?
It was like hers, and she was lending it.
Yeah.
I think she did explain it. There was some line of dialogue that I forgot about it.
Because I'm sure that might have been one criticism they actually took from the fans who were like, how the fuck do they get all these costumes and shit?
Right.
They were like, well, here, Sue owns it, so fuck you.
10 minutes in, Finn gets his first line of the episode. Come on, Mr. Shu, that's like a record our parents listen to. And already, Quarimani's mannerisms are bothering me. When he tries to act, it's worse than when he's just blank. But he does inspire Sue to call him Teen Solomon Grundy. First reference to Cheetah, then Barbara Gordon, now Solomon Grundy. Somebody on the Glee staff knows their DC comic characters. Yeah, Will. Tony Manero does get to New York City by the end of the movie. By then, he's coldly ditched his former partner, attempted to date rape his new partner, and utterly failed to help a troubled friend who then commits suicide. Feel-good story of the century. Covering the Bee Gees is a futile gesture, usually. That band has such a weird, specific sound that if you try to copy them, you just end up sounding like a second-rate karaoke. They found out that out the hard way when it was Bee Gees Night on American Idol a few seasons back. Your only real hope is to do your own thing with the song and not try to imitate them, something which Glee fails to do. The one cast member whose voice might be right for this, Chris Colfer, does not get a solo this week. But while we're on the topic, if Glee ever does I Started a Joke, great pre-disco Bee Gees song, and gives it to Kurt, I am seriously downloading that shit off iTunes. I don't know that song.
I don't either.
Okay. Low light of the episode, Finn's disco dancing.
Yes.
Puck and Mike's reaction are priceless. Mark Sailing averts his eyes, and Harry Shum looks like he caught someone peeing on his front yard. See, I liked it because it was just so funny to me. You know what Finn should do with his low life? Work at the goddamn tire store. Has everybody forgotten about the tire store? If he has a destiny, it's there. Good point. He was excited about the tire store.
He was.
Uh-oh, Mercedes got stuck in the school's designated slow motion hallway. She'll be about 3 hours late to class.
Did you watch that sketch that he posted?
No.
Oh, it's really funny. You should watch it. Okay. I've been watching Saturday Night Live lately, so I had seen it prior to him posting it, but I was like, that was kind of a great skit. I enjoyed it.
Speaking of, I wonder if Finn was 2 hours late to his class when he had to sit down and watch Saturday Night Fever.
Yeah, really.
Amber Riley doesn't do anything expected with Disco Inferno, but this is a really great number nevertheless, and it features more Heather Morris backup dancing. What's not to love? Agreed. Oh ho, what's this? Some actual backstory about Mercedes' life? I missed this the first time through. Shame on me. Okay, so Mercedes' dad is a dentist who doesn't share her dream. Finally, an actual fact about this girl. But you best watch what you say about skim milk, Mercedes. I pour that on my cereal and it is adequate. I use soy milk. Skim soy milk. Yeah. That line was kind of painful, I thought. What if here I'm just skim milk? Because it's the kind of thing like... I feel like you would write when you're, like, writing a journal entry when you're 16. Which I guess makes sense for Mercedes, but... Another goddamn focus bowl. This one from Finn to Rachel, and then another from Rachel to Finn. Boo! Corey's really intolerable in this scene. Even when he's encouraging Puck, he's whiny and mannered. Go back to being blank. So now Sue is back to her sneaky, underhanded, win-at-all-cost mode. Who is this woman? For this scene, she's like Dick Dastardly in Wacky Races, sprinkling tacks on the road so that the other drivers will get flat tires. I thought we agreed to stop writing Sue as a Hanna-Barbera villain, Glee. Sadly, Santana's big showcase number, If I Can't Have You, fell really flat for me. Yvonne Elliman is not the toughest act to follow, so Naya Rivera could have really gone to town on this. But no, it's just sort of musical wallpaper. Ah well, can't win them all. Santana's story about pursuing fame at all costs is just a rehash of the Puck Lauren story from season 2, right down to the sex tape. Yes, Lauren and Puck didn't actually get around to making their sex tape, but these are technicalities. I can't even pretend to be interested in this. Well, with one exception. Santana does get in a nifty little zinger at Brad's expense. 2 consecutive episodes with great Brad moments. We're this close to having enough raw material for a Best of Brad supercut. Or Erica and my new fantasy fiction where Brad is... really the
he's
motivating
the mastermind.
Force. Yeah.
Puppets.
Oh, okay. We should go down that path.
I know. Keep going.
Okay. Deep, weary sigh of resignation. It's another Rachel Finn moment, and they're declaring their undying love for each other. Oh, joy and rapture. I'm tired of Rachel's bangs. I miss seeing her forehead and eyebrows. Leah Michelle has great eyebrows, and they're going to waste. I still don't give a good goddamn about their future. How deep is your love? Please tell me. I was not the only one making a filthy joke about that. But Princess Leia does have a nice job with this, mainly because she doesn't feel obligated to imitate Barry Gibbs' falsetto. We're living in a world of fools breaking us down, she sings. Wonder who she means. And from there, we go into more speculation about Finn's future, because God knows we haven't had enough of that on the show recently. At least it brings Jamie Mays back onto our screens for a few minutes. It's so weird, the timing of this episode. Emily just linked to a Salon article called "Was Glee Ever Good?" I did, on Facebook. And one of the author's main complaints was about Will and how he's gone from being a potentially interesting character as a failed performer, trying to live vicariously through his students, to being a boring, saintly benefactor who's just there to tell his students he believes in them. And in this very episode, he actually tells Finn, "We believe in you." Hey, Lord Tubbington's back. How's it been, LT? Haven't seen you in a while. He's so great. Oi, more Finn future stuff. More Corey Monteith acting. I can't get through this a second time. But it's here where Saturday Night Fever, that dark, rapey movie I described earlier, is mistaken for the little engine that could. Really was. And back to Wade / Unique, who gets to deliver a little mini lecture on tolerance to Kurt and Mercedes, and to the audience, too. To make sure we don't miss the point, they have the actor deliver his lines right to the camera. Here is where the plausibility of this story completely falls apart. Jesse St. James would have micromanaged this routine to within an inch of its life. There's no way Unique could have gone on stage dressed like that without Jesse knowing. A choir director at a competition would have been with his group until the last second before they performed, making sure everything was perfect. And if Jesse hates Wade so much, why is the group's opening number obviously built around him? Was that all planned without Jesse's knowledge too? And once the competition is underway, there is no chance that Jesse would storm on stage to stop the performance. I'm sorry, I can't buy any of this, however well-intended the story might be. Good points. Yeah, because he's like, I'm going to fire that guy anyway. Well, then why did he give him a solo?
Because he's a good performer, which is why they gave him a part on the show.
But I agree, him storming on stage did feel unrealistic for somebody for Jesse, who knows the game so well. True story, a Rolling Stone reporter once asked the Bee Gees what it meant to be, quote-unquote, more than a woman. Their answer? 3 boobs. Seriously, this number would be great if Finn weren't at the center of it. Brittany and Santana look scrumptious in their 70s finery, and Kurt is adding a few little vocal embellishments, too. Glad he caught that, too. But if you have a great big steaming pile of Finn in the middle, but you have a great big steaming pile of Finn in the middle of the floor. Finn saying he wants to be an actor is like Edward Scissorhands saying he wants to be a massage therapist. Sorry, bro. Ain't gonna happen. Hey, side note, Emily here. Remember, like, when Kurt gave Finn a bunch of college brochures for places where they had, like, theater programs? Like, and remember a couple weeks ago? Well, I mean, like, months ago now. When Kurt's like, hey, Fordham, Hofstra, blah, 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 blah.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, it's the same exact thing happened this episode.
They couldn't say Hofstra, right?
No, they didn't say Hofstra. But still, it was like... That's what he ended up doing.
No, I mean,
doing.
They said it incorrectly, didn't they?
No, they said something else incorrectly. I forget which college. They said another college incorrectly, and they didn't say Hofstra, and that made you angry. Because you're like, you should go to Hofstra.
No, I think I feel like Hofstra got a shout out on that.
No,
show.
I don't think it did.
No?
I don't think so. No, we talked about Hofstra.
Yeah, Because
we said that's where you should go, but they didn't. Because then they said Fordham, which made us angry. Because Fordham doesn't have a musical theater program.
True.
But it did annoy me. Like, when you think about it, Kurt solved that problem months ago. When he's like, hey, go to a college that has musical theater. And, you know, and then you'll still be close to Rachel, but you'll be doing your own thing. He could have just done that 3 episodes ago. And then we didn't have to have this story. Mm-hmm. Anyway. So Finn is going to New York. Hooray. Oh, wait. Wasn't that already the plan? What was this hour all about, Glee? That's 485 views, Mercedes, on your suspiciously well-shot YouTube video. Not comments. Look at the screen that's 2 inches from you. YouTube doesn't count the number of comments, and 485 views ain't shit. Sorry, but to use your own analogy, it's skim milk. Yet another focus pull during the scene in Sue's office, but I'll forgive it because I love all 3 characters, and it's nice to see them in a scene together. We get 2 different distinct pronunciations of the word Louisville, neither one correct. And trust me, they're particular about their pronunciation. I've been trying to do this for a while because, like, my boyfriend's from Kentucky, so I was like, so you have to loosen your gums. It's really hard to do. It's more like, he spells it out phonetically, Louisville. But if you say it kind of slurred so that it sounds more like 2 syllables than 3, I can't do it right, but I'm closer to right than Glee is. But all in all, this is really a sweet Britannia Santitney moment. Louisville. Try it, Erica.
Louisville.
You kind of got it. Maybe I'm going to go to the University of Louisville. It's hard, man. Okay. Santana looks great in that John Travolta suit. She's the only one of the 3 winners to pull that look off. Well, yeah. You know what I want to do? Strut.
Ugh.
Great, except that's not from Saturday Night Fever. It's from Saturday Night Fever's infamous Sylvester Stallone-directed sequel, Stayin' Alive. And it was parodied or evoked to much great much more effectively by Bart Simpson in the Bart's Girlfriend episode. Remember? With Meryl Streep as Jessica Lovejoy. Oh, God, that was... Oh, God, that was 18 years ago. Time, you cruel bastard. Holy fuck, that episode was 18 years ago?
Apparently.
You know that episode where Bart has a crush on Reverend Lovejoy's daughter, who is voiced by Meryl Streep?
I've never, like, avidly watched the seasons.
That was 18 years ago? That is insane. I'm sorry, I'm just having an old moment here. Okay, Wayne continues. You know, it all seems clear. Staying Alive has that one line, life going nowhere. Somebody help me. And they worked backwards from those words and built the whole episode around that idea. Finn, Santana, and Mercedes' lives were going nowhere until people helped them. Get it? Now we have to have a second number with Cory Monteith singing in a falsetto range. I was just about to say that the arrangement has no original musical ideas, but that's not quite true. There's something interesting going on with the background vocals, with the singers making little ba-ba-ba sounds to imitate the strings. It makes me think how cool a Warblers version of this would have been. Wayne, why do you tease us like that? Next week's episode looks like torture, so that's something to look forward to.
Yep.
It's just next week is like, time to say goodbye, right?
It's,
Oh, it's the Whitney episode. Let's
dance with somebody.
Okay. So that was Saturday Night Gleaver, which curiously seemed to take place during the day and had no night scenes at all. Not the complete failure I thought it was on my first viewing, but not a resounding victory either. I wasn't as bothered by it on my second viewing, except for the abundance of Rachel Finn stuff, of which there was a metric ton. I'm going to call it a C-plus effort. That's probably what I would give it. What would have made it an A? Well, here's an idea. Instead of patiently explaining that you're going to do a Saturday Night Fever tribute and actually holding up the album cover to the camera, just take songs from the soundtrack and scenes from the movie and weave them into the show in a more natural way. Here's an example. One of the most famous scenes in the movie is an early sequence in which John Travolta lugs around paint cans to the tune of Stayin' Alive. Doesn't take a genius to figure out you could parody that scene by having Puck lugging around buckets of pool cleaning supplies. In other words, don't say you're doing a Saturday Night Fever episode. Just do one and let the audience figure it out on their own. If they get it, they get it. If they don't, hopefully the show is entertaining enough on its own to keep them hooked. Glee explains way too much. Show, don't tell.
Do you know how to do this last line? Are
no.
you familiar?
No, I don't.
You're not familiar with the Justin Timberlake Saturday Night Live skit?
No.
Jimmy Fallon and Justin Timberlake have a recurring skit on Saturday Night Live where they do the Barry Gibb talk show.
Okay.
And then they sing the theme song, Talking It Out on the Barry Gibb Podcast. And that's how you're supposed to do the last line.
Which Erica just did.
And that was the last line in the email.
Well done.
You should look up those sketches because okay. They're pretty great. Justin Timberlake is the brother. I forget what the brother's name is. Andy Gibb? The lighter-haired brother.
I don't know their names. I don't know.
But Jimmy Fallon is Barry Gibb, and okay. They kind of just sing everything in falsetto, and they have lots of chest hair, and they're really funny.
So it makes it fitting here.
Yep.
Yeah. That reminds me. Like that's what Community does. Community does like the Civil War episode last week with the pillows and blankets was an entire episode modeled on a Ken Burns documentary about the Civil War. Never once did they have to say. We're doing a Civil War parody, because they were, they respect their audience enough. And then again, Glee is aimed at a younger audience.
And this week they started the Dreamatorium with an entire Doctor Who reference. Right.
And then the whole thing was an Inception episode. And they throw out Inception, but it's not like, remember this scene in Inception. Now we're going to do this scene. Like, no, they just do it that way. And, it's a different audience, I understand. I mean, people are still not getting Cabin in the Woods. They're leaving it being like, I don't know why it wasn't scary and it was so cliched. Like, people don't get it. Like, so I don't know if it is just a matter of, treating your audience a certain way, but that's how it ends up going. Yeah. And so, with that, Glee, that was episode 16. If you want to reach us...
You can email us at gleecast@gmail.com. That's gleecast with a K.
Mm-hmm. You can visit our Facebook page, join our Facebook group and stuff at gleecast on Facebook.
By searching something for gleecast on Facebook.
Yeah.
Or friending us.
Yeah, hey, sure. You can follow us on Twitter at
Eric is Knits
and Deadly Dolls. And you can have a great day.
You do that. We'll be back
do that
next week. Bye.
Bye.